But as far as a few other ones that have been making their waves, the ones that everybody's come to talk about, let's start with Immaculate, because we'll be able because we'll talk the first Omen in next month's Watch and Watchlist.
Yeah.
But as far as Immaculate goes, another one. I mean, we'll say best marketing campaign of the entire year, easily.
Yes.
I think they've been having a lot of fun, with it to like kind of get people. I mean, Neon did a pretty good marketing job with Love's Light Bleeding as well, which I, you know, so they did a really good job. Yes, so it's like we got another nunsploitation movie with Sid Sweeney. She's the, you know, talk of the town. We talked about her in The Voyeurs. It was the same director that did The Voyeurs, Mike Mohan, that did Immaculate, where we have a nun. She gets immaculately pregnant.
Yeah.
There's a mystery, spooky nun castle.
You know the drill.
You know the drill. And I will say that, yeah, we're both a little bit more lukewarm on it than everybody else. I think the first half of the movie is very boring and forgettable.
Yeah.
But then once the second half does kick in and we get a little bit more of the body horror, we get more, once the reveal, I won't even say twist, because I kind of had seen it coming, and I think it doesn't drastically change what the trajectory of the movie would have been if it was what we thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it at least gave the movie some energy, and then we get to see Sid Sweeney go on a hell of a final girl circuit, pregnant, fucking crosses burned on her feet,
running fast as hell,
doing all barefoot, sorts of shit, screaming, lots of screaming,
pulling nails off, crazy shit. Yeah, for me, I was kind of the mind where I think a lot of the movie is pretty forgettable, and there's some good scenes in it. I will say that I am glad that people are talking about this movie. I'm glad it's making waves. I also agree the marketing of this film has been stupendous. I'm glad to see. You know, we're in an age of everything's got to go viral, and every marketing campaign has to be this viral sort of sensation. But this is one that I felt was kind of poking fun at this, you know, day old satanic panic sort of energy of, you know, back in like the late 70s. And for this to kind of, even in a small way, sort of recapture what a movie like The Exorcist did back in the day, where, you know, people were fainting. If this is even like a glimmer of that, I think it's like a good sign for horror, you know, that movies like this, a movie that ends the way that it does, no spoilers, but gets people talking, and is also a movie that you could see widely throughout America.
Yes.
I think that's sick, and I wish more movies existed like this. I also, Sydney Sweeney as an actress has yet to really, in my eyes, have a project that really illuminates me to the talent that I think that she's capable of. I think a lot of the films that I've seen from her performance-wise, I found myself a little let down by. I think I mentioned that on the Voyeurs episode. And I think that here, this really plays to her strong suits. I think that she does an emotional 11 really well, where she's screaming and snot's dripping from her nose and she's crying, or she's
big ass eyes of hers.
Yeah, she does all that amazing. Some of the more subtle, some of the more dramatic sequences, I think, leave a little bit to be desired. But from a producer standpoint, I also really admire this movie. The fact that she read this script very early in her career, a script that was written 15 years ago, and the fact that she believed in this project enough to circle back to it, purchase the rights, and get this movie made, that's awesome. I just wish that the movie was better, because I think it is mostly super mediocre, which sucks.
I don't blame Sweeney as much for that. I blame the screenplay. I think it could have been just paced out better. It's a barely 90-minute movie, and I felt like I was in there for like over 2 hours. I will say the set design's really great choral score.
Oh yeah.
I was just thinking now, because I watched another religious horror in the month, which I wasn't gonna spend too much time on, but I imagine if I combine these two movies, we would have a great movie. If you combine Immaculate with the Pope's Exorcist. That's what we were missing.
Honestly,
in Immaculate.
To me, the Pope's Exorcist, if you were like, let's rewatch the Immaculate or the Pope's Exorcist. Exorcist
Pope's
is going
Exorcist.
On, baby.
Pope's
okay?
Exorcist
yeah,
is going
yeah.
on.
That movie.
But imagine if you combine these two movies, I think you have the perfect banana pants Catholic horror movie.
With, yeah, because and that's the thing that this movie is missing is it's not banana pants enough. Like no. it's you
agreed.
Know,
agreed.
I think that there are sequences in this movie, and it was funny because like I went and saw this with a group of friends. It was at a Q&A afterwards with the writer and director and the composer of this film. So to hear their perspective of this movie was really fascinating. But I was talking with friends afterwards, and they were all kind of like, when that reveal happens and this movie kind of goes into that banana pants kind of territory, a lot of them were sort of like, I could have done without. And I was like, no, I need more of that. When they were like,
it could have been a lot weirder, because again, I was like, I saw that coming, but it also is just like, it's just only slightly different than what is presented yeah. in these films typically.
Yeah.
Which I mean, yeah, but it again, yeah, it could have went even bigger and better.
Slight spoilers, but the moment that they're like, hey, we have the blood of the actual Jesus Christ, and we're doing like experiments on it, I was like, where has this been the entire movie? What is even doubly frustrating, and this was insight that I learned at the Q&A, this will be, I guess not really spoilers, but, because it's not in the movie, but there was a scene in this film where Sidney Sweeney is like, you know, trying to escape, running through the catacombs that are, you know, under this this nunnery, this convent, and in this dream that she's having when she's trying to escape, she hears like this baby crying, and she like goes to try to find out what that noise is. Turns out it's Jesus crying in the corner, like the actual noise of a baby coming out of Jesus Christ's, you know, bloody head, to me was like, you're just describing scenes that are only making this movie better. Like,
they should
that
have given it to us.
Yeah. All that to say, I think that there are a lot of ideas here that just were kind of, I don't know. There's a reason that this script sat on the shelf for 15 years. That to me was very evident watching this, because it just sort of felt like we're doing Suspiria, you know, we're doing, you know, any other kind of Rosemary's Baby kind of, you know, a movie like that, but didn't really distinguish itself enough to kind of warrant the discussion that people were having about the film. Again, yeah. I'm glad people were talking about it, but I just wish it was for a better movie.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I'm glad that everyone had so much fun with it, that, you know, people are really loving it, thinking it's super crazy. That's fantastic. I'm yeah. that totally, but it just, yeah, I feel like there was just opportunities for it to go, you know, bigger and weirder. Yeah. I mean, hell, watch The Voyeurs. Even The Voyeurs goes has a more bonkers yeah. ending than this does. So yeah. Go back and listen to that episode if you haven't. And then, yes, we have Late Night with the Devil, another one that had a lot of chatter online yeah. For various reasons. And I'll say, because I haven't tweeted about this, is just for you patrons. I haven't tweeted about this because I didn't really want to get into it. I get that the whole AI thing, it sucks. You know, like seeing it, you know, trickle its way into the industry mm-hmm. is disappointing. But however, it's kind of my similar thing with like a art versus artist type of deal. Like, I don't want to discount the rest of everyone else that worked on this movie, you know, that did everything that is not the 20 seconds of these images that we kind of see throughout the film, you know, like, I will fault whoever made that decision. Like, mm-hmm. if that was a director that he approved it, and it's like, yeah, that kind of sucks, and I'm gonna kind of see his work a little mm-hmm. bit differently in the future. But at the same time, like, I, you know, so much hard work went into this film that I think it's unfair when people were talking about like, oh, let's just all pirate the movie now, and it's like, no, mm-hmm. that's not the way to, like, you know, combat this. Like, I get it. Like, yeah. People want to be proactive with what's going on AI, and we should. I just think there's a certain way to do it, and, you know, certain places to place your blame. That's my piece on that.
Yeah, as far as the AI situation goes, look, I understand and I totally relate to the frustration that so many people have. The way that AI is being used now, I think, is a bit different than it was when this movie was in production. To me, it is for those commercial bumpers, so it is only a short amount of time, but also the set of the film, a lot of the look of that was also created with AI, which is like the entire movie. So it is one of those things that to me was noticeable throughout the entire film, especially like in that backdrop that is behind, you know, the entire set is AI generated. And you're right. It is true.
I thought it was only the insert cards.
It's not just the insert cards. It's a lot of the the production design stuff as well. If you look at like the owl, it's like the exact same logo as like the bumpers. So they just kind of did some, design wizardry sort of stuff. But almost beside the point. To me, it's not even necessarily like you have to use this much AI art to be annoyed. No, it's like any amount. I'm just like, God, why? To me, though, I don't necessarily think the way to combat this is to boycott like a low budget independent horror film.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I think if you want to support artistry and support artists, the best way to do that is to support movies like this. And I understand people's conviction, and I get it, and hold studios like Disney accountable where they use AI in their Secret Invasion, you know, like the closing credits for that show. Like, hold them accountable, because I do think a lot of these organizations and these corporations that make these movies and these shows, they will try to use this technology to replace people and to replace people's jobs. So I totally understand people's conviction, and I think it's something that we have to be vigilant about. And I think it sucks that they also had time to totally replace it, like those bumpers. You know, whenever this hits streaming, I hope it's something that they address. There's still time to do that. So I think all of those things can be true, but I really enjoyed the film for what it's worth. You know, I thought it was a really fun, solid movie that I could easily see sort of entering into that Hollywood, Halloween rotation, that yearly kind of October watch, similar to sort of like a Ghost Watch or, you know, something that, you know, Halloween 3 just gets you in that kind of spooky season spirit. So for me, yeah, the AI art thing, it sucks, but also I think that there are other and more discussions to be had beyond just condemning the AI art. Let's do a little bit of both here. I think we can hold creators accountable, but also still, at the end of the day, support low budget and more kind of independent art. So
yeah, I mean, this is a, you know, a thing that we're seeing develop in real time, you know, so it's kind of fascinating on, you know, trying to figure out the best way to not only combat this, but have these conversations, you know, a little bit more nuanced. I was just disappointed in how many tweets I was seeing of people being like, yeah, let's steal the movie instead to do this. And it's like, no, like, because you're condemning AI, which is, you know, that all that whole thing. So
sure.
I thought the film was, I thought it was decent. I was a little disappointed by it. I thought the production design, like the commitment to the 70s talk show aesthetic, I think was fantastic. I think it was well casted across the board. Even just like, you know, him having the sidekick that chuckles in and out of stuff. I thought the gal that gets possessed, Ingrid Torelli, I thought she was really fun, doing a really fun thing. I think David Zsmalchin, I think he plays the talk show host thing, but I kind of wanted more insight into his character, into his feelings, and I feel like it didn't, again, go weird enough. Like, I wanted this to be more, I wanted this to have more energy and be more fun. I was kind of expecting it to be a little bit more kinetic, but it's like, it's really pretty slow, and then the finale, like, does like a bunch of crazy shit in like 5 minutes, and then we're like out. I did not like the end of this movie. Because I also saw it coming too, as well as like the whole resolution of it. I was like, man, that's kind of predictable. I kind of saw that like from the beginning. But as far as, again, like an alternative form of found footage, the way that it's kind of put together, I think is interesting. With it happening in real time, did help a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I like some of the stuff that was going on, some of the possession stuff that was happening. And I think they could have done more, and then like the effects on some of the stuff wasn't the best either, like whenever we get like kind of super crazy in the end, didn't look the best. So like, I mean, the like practical stuff when they just have people, you know, spitting, you know, black bile out and stuff like that, fun, let's do more of that. But I felt just underwhelmed. I didn't feel satisfied by the end. Like, I did not feel satisfied, and I was just like, hey, I'd just rather watch The Cleansing Hour again.
Yeah, very similar DNA, which is funny that we talked about that the month before, because I don't even think that was intentional on our part. But I thought that for me, it wasn't necessarily that I wanted more crazy moments. I just kind of wanted a bit more consistency tonally. I think it is a bit all over the place of, are we doing this sort of lo-fi spook 'em up where people are doing what you're talking about, like spitting up black bile, or, you know, kind of your,
and like how much comedy do we need, like, as things like kind of progress? Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to, like, I would like, because obviously it's like a comedy talk show, but like once the shit starts going on, I wanted it to get like really sinister, and it didn't ever get there.
Oh really? See, because I thought that it maintained that tone quite well, and I also thought that there was a lot to mine from the character of Jack Delroy, who is like this late night host who's probably part of this cult, who probably sold his, you know, actually I won't spoil it here, but he's probably up to some shady shit in order to kind of sell his soul to the devil, I guess I'll say, in order to obtain the success. So to kind of see the, you know, the second fiddle to a Johnny Carson or something, I thought was really fascinating. But to me, I thought that the way it slowly ratcheted tension, I thought was really nice. Otherwise, for me, I'm not really sure structurally how this film would work if the crazy shit is happening like constantly throughout the show. You know, you'd think it would get shut down pretty quickly and people would be like, fuck this, I'm out of here. So I did like how it was this escalation of craziness, but boy, does it go to 11 real quick. I liked how crazy that moment is that you're talking about. I liked how over the top and zany it was. I just wish that the rest of the film either would have matched that level or made that moment a bit quieter. You know, it's they're so disconnected that that moment just felt like a bit too zany, but I hesitate to say that it could get too zany. I love zaniness in movies. Yeah. So yeah, commit to the bit.
I don't know. It was like once the possession stuff actually happens, because like the actual possession stuff doesn't happen till like the 45-minute mark, 50-minute mark. Like once homegirl comes out, then I'm like, okay, now we're rolling in this. Because I mean, too much of the Carmichael Haig guy. Mm-hmm. Oh my god!
Like the
skeptic guy, the guy that disproves. Oh, I see. Stuff. Yeah, yeah. I was so over him. And yeah, I don't know, Jack Delroy, like, yes, I appreciate like the stuff where it's like, oh, how far will your ambition take you to, mm-hmm. like what you want, but is like, we already, again, like, I don't know, I from the first like 10 minutes I knew like what it was gonna be, but sure. Then the film like kind of goes back and forth with Jack knowing what's going on but also not knowing what's going on. I feel like if they just would have picked a lane, it would have made his decisions a little bit more interesting.
Sure.
So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it is a bit difficult to talk about without getting into spoilers, but yeah, I think he does a great job as an actor. I thought Dasmalchian, you know, we don't really get him as a lead ever, so
which I'm happy for him, so happy for.
Yeah,
him.
Exactly. Yeah, so for him to have this, I thought was really strong performance for him to be able to nail this late night talk show host, which I don't think is an easy thing. I think that that's kind of a hard role to nail that, because if you're not that kind of performer, then you're not that kind of performer. So to be able to turn that on and then in the moment's notice, you know, kind of sink into yourself and to the truth of who this person is, I think that there's a lot of things unsaid about his character, which I found really compelling, but it does kind of require reading between the lines, you know, reading into a look, even a read from Dasmalchian himself to get a bit from his character. But yeah, I think this is one I'm definitely going to be checking out again, maybe come future Octobers.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it another chance, like, because it does at least have the spooky vibes. We'll see if it makes a list at the end of the year, maybe, mm-hmm. from one of our guests or one of, well, it won't be me. Maybe you. Maybe you are the guest. Won't be on my list.
Yeah, probably not me either.
If you enjoyed this clip and want to hear the full episode, head on over to patreon.com/spectrecinema, where you will enter the Phantom Zone, a supernatural place housing all sorts of bonus goodies for any specters that want to help support the show financially. You will gain access to watching the watch list, full movie commentaries, as well as be able to participate in polls where you can pick a subgenre you want to hear us cover for a month, or become a producer and you can even pick a film that you want us to review on the main feed. If you cannot support us financially right now, it's all good. Just share our podcast with one of your spooky friends, as well as rate and review on your podcatcher of choice. But until next time, we'll be haunting you.